At Lowe's, this Veterans Day and every day, verified military members, veterans, and their spouses get automatic silver status in MyLowe's Rewards with free standard shipping, plus 10% off eligible purchases with no annual limit. It's one way we honor and give back to those who have served and still do. Learn more now at Lowe's.com/military. 10% discount can't be combined with another offer. Exclusions, terms, and conditions apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. The New World Report with Professor Evan Ellis, U.S. Army War College. We go to Venezuela and the Caribbean. The headline from Reuters. U.S. expecting Russian naval exercises in Caribbean this summer. The United States does not see the move involving a relatively small number of vessels and planes as threatening, but the U.S. Navy will monitor the exercises. This will include port calls in Cuba and stops in Venezuela. Professor, it is not a secret that adversaries are now very much part of the conversation in many American countries. Caracas, of course, because of the disorder of these last years, the failed state, Maduro, the dictatorship, the driving more than 7 million Venezuelans to other countries, many of whom are now in New York City and Washington, D.C., listening to us. However, what this looks like right now is it's not about connections with Tehran or Hezbollah or Chinese investors. This is a Russian military flotilla coming to the Caribbean. Calling it Cuba is not a shock. Stops in Venezuela are suggestive. Where is this going, Professor? Is this like the Great White Fleet of Teddy Roosevelt, Putin showing his strength? And I'll ask the concern that I've read. Is this about supporting Venezuela if and when it moves against Guyana?
Well, John, to put this in context, it's important to look at the synergies between Chinese engagement, Russian engagement, and Iranian engagement, and others in the Western Hemisphere. And of course, by contrast to China, the engagement by Russia and Iran is much more limited in economic terms and also in terms of the allies with which it does things. Although in the case of both Iran and Russia, that engagement tends to be much more deliberately provocative toward the United States. What you also find is traditionally when Russia has wanted to essentially send messages to the United States and project threats into the region. It does so through a series of anti-U.S. regimes that I would refer to as threat actors. These have traditionally been Venezuela, Nicaragua, and of course, Cuba, although Bolivia sometimes plays, as do others. And so periodically, for example, in 2008, when Russia was upset with the United States for getting involved in its indirect invasion of the state of Georgia, Russia sent, again, its Tu-160 backfire bomber to Nicaragua and flew around the Caribbean and Venezuela to show that they could project a threat. They did similar things in 2013. They've done similar things to show their support to Venezuela in 2019-20. They periodically would send their warships to the region. Of course, Russia actually sold a lot of military equipment to Venezuela during the era of Hugo Chavez until they ran out of money. So what you've seen is this has been kind of a periodic presence to show that it could do so in the U.S. backyard while supporting these key anti-U.S. allies. And so in many ways, this is a continuation of that kind of periodic message sending. Even since the beginning of the war in Ukraine, what you've had is signaling. Russia came in 2022 to participate in a Venezuelan small-scale combat exercise. You've had Sergei Lavrov come to the region. You've had other Russian officials come to the region and sign commitments for military cooperation with Venezuela. But in this particular incident, it appears that as Russia is getting a little bit bolder and more successful on the battlefield in Ukraine, and certainly as it's becoming basically annoyed by the U.S. approval of the use of weapons supplied to Ukraine to strike into Russian territory, it seems that it's trying to send yet another message that it can strike, that can project that presence. And so the fact that it is going to be sending these warships and probably some more Tu-160s into the Caribbean with probably warships port calls in Cuba and Venezuela as they've done before, although this technically is the first time that they've done at least a symbolic large-scale exercise. Now, there has been some suggestion that there could be a connection Venezuelan military posturing with respect to Guyana. There was recently indications that Venezuela is making minor modification to increase its presence to be able to project power through, for example, the Anaco Island in that border region in Esquibo there. But overall, it seems that this seems to be Russian posturing with respect to Venezuela. And certainly, I think the U.S. administration, the Biden administration, has wanted to get out in front of this to say, yes, we know about this. We're limited in our concern. I think in many ways, probably to desensitize this so this does not look like a shock and in a high level provocation. But certainly, anytime you have warships of an armed adversary with which you are indirectly in hostilities, projecting that presence in close proximity to the shores, you have to take note of that.
I mentioned the port of call in Havana. That on the one side is not new, but Cuba has been a troubled nation for quite some time now. Its power grid, its food security, its leadership for some time. Is there a new look at Cuba because of this obvious bold link with Russia? I mean, we are at war with Russia if you call us NATO. We're not at war with Russia if you call us what? The Americas.
Well, I think certainly in the case of Cuba, I mean, number one, the Cuban party control continues to be as strong as ever, even if they've had some significant national protests as they had in July 2021. And so absolutely, on the one hand, the Cuban economy is falling apart. So I think some of the Cuba's behaviors shows both its political attitude under the Díaz-Canel administration as well as its desperation. The desperation that's led to over 500,000 Cubans basically fleeing for economic opportunities elsewhere, as things have continued to go downhill in the post-COVID environment. But that same desperation has also led the Díaz-Canel administration to welcome in Russian investors and even Iranian investors on terms that you haven't seen before. So on the one hand, I think although Cuba has been traditionally a little bit cautious about allowing the Russians to exploit their territory to do provocative things, they remember the Cuban Missile Crisis very well, certainly better than Venezuela understands that lesson. So the fact that on the one hand, they're willing to allow themselves to essentially be used by Russia to project threats, I think shows you something about their desperation. And it also shows something about the state of mind of Díaz-Canel, that if there was maybe previously some hopes that things could be better with the Biden administration, but by playing nice, they might get more sanctions relief. I think you're seeing kind of return to Cuba of playing hardball with the Biden administration, not expecting to get anything more. And so what do you have to lose by cooperating militarily with the Russians to send a lesson to your geopolitical adversaries, the United States?
Buenos Aires, the capital of Argentina, much in the news because of the election of Javier Milei and his success on tours of the United States and going to Israel, is generally a spectacular presentation of a new Argentina. And yet, Reuters, Buenos Aires, homelessness is on the rise across major Argentine cities as the new libertarian government's tough medicine reforms squeeze pensions. Latest survey by local authorities showed the official number of Argentines sleeping rough on the streets of Buenos Aires reached 4,009 in April, up from 3,511. Remember, it's winter in Argentina right now. And there's a photograph accompanying this of two senior females, neither of which look in any fashion well taken care of, holding what looks to be a cup of coffee and a roll. And there's a lineup of senior citizens behind looking for a coffee and a roll. It's a rough picture to see, given the case that libertarians make about how you've got to put the national budget on a diet in order to cure the inflation that was damaging the ability of the state. And yet, Professor, we've seen this before. We've touched on it. Reuters is now emphasizing it again. Malay's in a race. How much of the social network can collapse before and if he achieves his inflation goals? Do we have a measure of that?
Well, John, there is I would argue, a trade-off between his political tools to be able to continue to implement the change that he needs to make things better and convince investors to come back in and that very suffering. And so I think what we've seen in the previous months is he's really done about as right as he could, some of the hard economic measures. And so we've seen, under his effective management, the creation of a budget surplus now for 4 months in a row. We've seen the peso, which was being really falling without control. It seems to be kind of in a controlled, managed situation right now. We've seen inflation come down to single digits on a monthly basis. And so at least that the macro numbers are looking good. But at a micro level, of course, as you allude to, that the consequences of essentially stopping spending, stopping major work on constructions, eliminating half of the ministries, which cut about 50,000 direct jobs, the impact of inflation on people's earnings. It's estimated right now that something like 60% of Argentines are now in poverty. That number is bumped up significantly. And even though Milei is still relatively popular, one poll shows him getting about 50% popularity, which puts him actually among some of the more popular in the region. But the problem is, as you pointed out, that the toll on everyday people has started to lead to pushback. I mean, you can see it in things like the homeless figures that you alluded to. You can see it in things like the recent protests a couple of weeks ago against some more changes to the university system. And what's starting to happen now also is that as he tries to push his reform package through Congress, It was passed in the House in April, and now it's going forward in the Senate. It was just reported out of committee, but it actually suffered a significant setback in terms of some of the ability to push through some of the significant reforms that he needs to reinduce the income tax, to privatize state-owned companies. And so the risk is that if, because of that suffering of the people, that politically he is not able to get his reforms through, that inability to get his reforms through then begins to cast more doubt that helps keep investors out. If the investors don't come in, then the lives of people do not get better. And so there's kind of a spiral. So I think it's still for Milei to be able to pull this off, and he's done unprecedented work in turning the economy around. But if he can't break that cycle of suffering, giving cause to his opponents, losing political momentum, and thus undercutting his ability to make things better, if he can't break that cycle politically, then then things could go south.
I mentioned that there is also a story about Argentina's Senate challenging Milei for his reform bills. That is a story we've touched on before. So he has to battle two problems. One is the homelessness and the food lines damaging the credibility of the government to take care of its people, which is the primary goal of any government. And then Milei has to deal with the fact that he does not have a sufficient party in the legislature to act upon his reforms, what he says is necessary. However, we need to rush to Peru. There's big news in Peru. Professor Evan Ellis, U.S. Army War College Strategic Studies Institute. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.